I am a to-do list aficionado. I have to-do lists within my to-do lists. I use notepads, sticky notes, and more than one app on my phone, not to mention all the mental checklists in my head. And although I love to check things off, these lists don't always help me be my best self. For example, getting ready to go in the mornings, I'm more like a to-do list tornado. Circling around the house, making sure lunches are packed, blow-drying my hair, and reminding the kids multiple times about brushing their teeth or remembering their homework. And despite my hard work, when there's literally no time left, I can't seem to convince my six-year-old to put her boots on. So 43 minutes and 16 seconds later, when I've finally made it to the elevator at work and the doors close behind me, I stop and I think, I don't really want life to be this itemized, strung-out flurry of activity. There must be a better way. Surely it is possible to feel purposeful and centered even when there is a lot to do, even in a short period of time. So I've been looking for ways to set that higher intention instead. And the solution I'm trying out is, well, it's kind of another to-do list, but this one is different. It is my master to-do list. This master list holds my greater life intentions that I can remember and fall back on when I need to reconnect with what I really want in life. My master to-do list is as follows. 1, become the person I'm meant to be in this life. 2, cultivate joy and connection in my family, my immediate family, my work family, this family. 3, enjoy the experiences life has to offer. That's it, 3 things. This is the to-do list that puts all others into perspective. And practicing remembering it does not necessarily mean we make it out the door on time. But I'm a lot happier. And even when I show up to work with wet hair, or a few minutes late, or if my daughter foregoes the boots and completely soaks her running shoes, I know that I've worked on the list that really matters, and that those boxes are checked. I invite you to...
It never ceases to amaze me how much a piece of music can transport you somewhere. And that last hymn was a hymn I never really noticed in our hymnal over years and years. And then the first congregation I was serving in Madison, Wisconsin, this young woman, one of the few young adults we had in the congregation, sat at the piano and played that hymn for me and said, "This is my favorite hymn in the whole hymnal." And we had a whole conversation about immortal love. So I'm thinking of Kelda this morning. This morning's reading comes from the poet Tina Schumann. And much like Samantha's to-do lists, I think of this poem as sort of hers. It's a poem entitled, "A World of Want." You think your life will go on like this forever. Weekly trips to the garbage bin, untangling the green snake of hose between the ferns and the delphiniums, the coral bells leaning their long necks against the back fence. Today, as I watch the carousel of cars turn one by one through the intersection and onto the freeway, I tried to imagine each life. Not so much where they were going, but what they were made of. Wounds, illusions, desires, deceits. Through all of this, a preoccupation with the next perceived need floats up like thought bubbles inside my head. Coffee, Cheetos, a new blouse, a larger house, a desk fan, appreciation from that one specific person, the phone's chirp, the trip to France. If I could quiet this conga line of cravings, what lingering longings would I lament? What radiant, unattached insights would I muster? Who would I be without my constant yearnings? It's a world of want. You get the idea. Setting a path for our lives. Usually, we think about intention in pretty simple ways. Perhaps along with the poet, our intentions have become more like a list. Things I want or need to do in the next days, weeks, months, or even years of my life. Perhaps we only think of intentions as how we approach people or experiences. My intentions are good or bad, well lived out, or simply fallen into. Intentions as a barometer for how much I act in a way that aligns with what I set out to do. The spiritual notion of intention, however, is a bit different, it seems to me. Before I begin to do anything, I set an intention. How will I, how do I wish to meet this moment, this person, this circumstance? What do I need to bring with me into this encounter? Who do I hope to be? And perhaps as importantly, what do I need to leave behind? Preconceptions or assumptions or expectations. Initially, when I went on spiritual retreats or read New Age texts, I will confess, I sort of wrote off this vision of intention as hokey at best and magical thinking at worst. I just set my intentions. If I just set my intention, it will happen as I wish. Come on. But the longer I live, the longer I go about trying to live well, the less sure I become about my sneering, leering past. I'm not so sure now because I think there is a deeper or richer way to approach a spiritual sense of intention. This is not an if you intend it, it will happen way of thinking. This is not the field of dreams kind of intention. If I just think it, it will make it so. It's more a it matters how we approach our living type of intention, because I think it does. Setting an intention can be as simple and as difficult as pausing before an interaction or a meeting or an outing and bringing to the surface how we wish to be. It is about making more conscious what sometimes swims beneath the surface of our thinking and our awareness. How different might my interactions and connections be if I took a few beats and a few breaths beforehand to center on the what and the why and the how of what was to come. We live in a culture that values moving quickly and getting things done. I bet Samantha has that list because checking boxes is so virtuous. It makes us feel good about ourselves that I've checked those boxes, because our culture tells us checking boxes is what life is all about. But that doesn't leave space for intentionality. In fact, it encourages us to continue on in unintentional and unconscious patterns of behavior and thought. We can go along obliviously for a good long time. Have you noticed that? Sometimes you're just kind of going about minding your own business, you think, and then something kind of slaps you upside the head and you're like, wow, I was really not paying attention at all to how I was being in the world. It takes real effort to interrupt this typical pattern that we have and to try to do things differently. To live a life that is the one you mean to live, not just the one that is happening to you. I'm going to say that again. To live a life that is the one you mean to live, not just the one that is happening to you. Unfolding as it is with little real input at all from you. Some of the moments in my life in which I feel I have learned the most are the ones in which I was bumbling along quite obliviously, when something then snapped me out of my malaise and my routine and told me, pay attention to this. Life can ask you to pay attention. Life can remind you why you are here. Try as we might and sometimes do to ignore it, at times it will break through the noise and the clutter and the lists of want to say, this is actually important. This is why you are alive. I had one such moment, about a year or so ago. I'm getting ready tomorrow to board a plane to Boston. And when I'm there, I lead these interviews for people who want to become ministers. I'm there to try to help discern, along with some colleagues of mine, are they ready? And as I was leading one of these interviews, I thought I was doing a wonderful job being a wonderful host and also paying attention to the spirit and emotion in the room. And I heard coming out of my mouth this horrible phrase. I said to the interviewee, we will do this thing with you and then we will circle the wagons. We will what now? I caught myself immediately and said, no, we won't do that. Because circling the wagons harkens back to what settlers would do as they made their way west in wagon caravans. They would stop for the night and get into circle formation to protect themselves from the indigenous people. I do not wish to circle the wagons. To circle the wagons of my heart or to do harm with my speech, and so I try again and again and again to speak with intention. I thought it was good modeling for, you know, this interviewee. I was just really helping out. We have been trying, we, the First Unitarian Church of Victoria community, to figure out a way in this world that we find ourselves in to be clear about why we are here and who we are and who we are not. We have tried to do that in this British Columbia environment, which is so secular and so anti-religious in some ways and spiritually suspicious. We have tried to be intentional about saying why we are here and why we do what we do, why we sponsor refugees, why we are part of Greater Victoria Acting Together, why we play the music we play, why we join Soul Matters groups, why we do any of it. What makes us a spiritual community? And we can only do that if we have a clear sense of intention together, a collective intention. If rather than haphazardly stumbling through what we are doing, we are intentional and saying, this is what we are about. One of our best known Unitarian ancestors, Henry David Thoreau, famously wrote when he retreated to Walden to try to figure out what life was all about. He wrote, and I quote, "I went to the woods because I wished to live deliberately, to front only the essential facts of life and see if I could not learn what it had to teach. And not, when I came to die, discover that I had not lived. I did not wish to live what was not life. Living is so dear." He uses the word deliberately in that quotation, but you could also substitute intentionally, and the meaning would be the same. He wanted to live life, not what was not life. He wanted to figure out what that was, and we too, in our own time and day, are trying to figure out how to live that which is life, not live that which is not. We are here because we cannot be our best selves or global citizens or people who lead with love by ourselves. We need a laboratory in which to nurture and gain skills and tools by which we can live in harmony with others and with this planet. We need a community grounded in values that reminds us of our aspirations and our hopes, of our vulnerabilities and our fragility. Because I might think I'm doing just fine, but then I say something like circling the wagons, and I need you to remind me I can do better, I should do better, and I will do better. So why do you come here? What do you hope it will make of you and of me and of us? I want to close this morning's message with a story about school drop-off and school pickup. Twice recently, when I was going to or from Demetrius's elementary school, I ran into people who knew who I was. It's getting a bit harder for me to go incognito these days. Not sure how I feel about that. I was walking along, minding my own business, getting him into his K-1 French immersion kindergarten line, and this woman comes up to me, says, "You're Shauna, aren't you? Oh, I remember you. You spoke to the Gonzalez preschool group that I'm a part of a few years ago. I really appreciated what you had to say." 2 days later, I'm walking to do pickup and walking along. So, "You're Shauna, aren't you?" "Yeah." "Oh, yes, I am. Yes, I am." She said, "My mother-in-law goes to your church." And of course, the funny thing was, my first thought after I had these two interactions was, well, whew, it's good I was on my best behavior. I wasn't doing anything I was ashamed of. Didn't say anything mean-spirited or rude. In fact, I was being pretty sweet, if I do say so myself. I was commenting on K-1 Kit's granddaughter's umbrella, which I told her was much sweeter and cuter than mine, and I needed to rethink my umbrella choices. One of the best friends that I've made in the last 3 years is a three-year-old. A three-year-old who is the younger sibling of somebody that was in Demetrius' kindergarten class last year. Sherriston has sort of adopted me. Often, most days now, when I do drop-off, we leave holding hands, and she tells me, tighter. The other day, I carried her down the block, talking with her about things, and after I put her down, and she went off into her day, and I went off into mine, I thought, it's not about being on your best behavior. It's not about looking good. It's about living in the world as the person you want the world to be. I want people to pick up other people's three-year-olds and carry them down the block because they love them. I want them to hold someone's hand and say, tighter. And so, my friends, for all of us, living with intention is about being in the world in a way that helps to create the world that we want. Not just when it's convenient, not just when it looks good, not just when you've had enough sleep, but all the time. All the time. May we live with intention. May we hold the hands of life just a little bit tighter.